These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are from the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pleasure to have you with us. Thanks very much for joining in. Orion, I don't know if Orion is still listening. Are you there? Eric Rung talked earlier about it. And Eric, tell me a little bit more about the China trade talks. You know, it's interesting because some of the copy I was reading earlier today said that the fact that this economy czar was coming was a good sign. Others said that the talks are in a shambles. It looks as if Wall Street at least thinks the latter is more likely.
Well, I think you're right. I'm still with you.
All right. Oh, what do you think?
Well, I think that's very true, because until we finally get some semblance of a decision on the U.S.-China trade agreement, I mean, for 4 months now, every day we've been leading off with a headline that says progress is being made. But when is that going to come to an end, and when will we finally see progress? But I do think the fact the vice premier is coming to Washington for the talks on Thursday and Friday could give us some hope that China is still engaged.
You know, I'm just a guy trying to figure out what's going on, and we keep getting such mixed signals. You know, things are hot, things are cold. And is that because the negotiators are talking through us, or are they really that hot and cold? Or, I mean, what are we to make of what we're hearing from either side?
Well, from either side, I think the only conclusion we can make is that they are still not close to a final settlement on the U.S.-China trade talks. And I really think the bigger problem, besides soybeans and agricultural products, and now pork, is the fact that technology issues and copyright issues are real sticking points with China. But this pork situation, and I'm going to talk about it later today during our show, is becoming unbelievably serious as far as China is concerned. They could be losing half of their hog population, and they're the biggest hog producer in the world.
And this is because of a swine flu there?
African swine fever, which is not transmissible to humans in any way, but it is fatal to hogs, and there is no vaccine yet available to stop it. And it's spreading all over the world, South Africa, European Union. Hopefully it'll not get to the United States, but the way people can travel today, you never know.
That's why they ask you when you come back from overseas if you've been in a farm or places like that.
And I hope people answer that question honestly, because it'll mean they have to. The USDA inspectors will probably wash their boots or their shoes, and that's only going to take 5 minutes or so, but it could keep a deadly disease out of the United States. You know, we canceled the World Pork Expo in Des Moines next month because of the concern over the spread of the disease.
So let's say it stays out of the U.S. but ravages China and elsewhere. What will that mean for those of us who like a pork chop on a stick at the state fair?
It'll get more expensive here, but take a look at the China thing, because they are going to see pork prices go exceedingly high. And they're not only the biggest producer, they are the biggest consumer of pork of any country in the world. They're so far above the U.S. in hog numbers that I think they're four times the hog numbers there that we have here in the United States. So it's an important part of their diet, and it's an important part of the protein diet around the world.
Are the tariffs and the threat of tariffs working when it comes to these trade talks?
We'll see on Friday. I'm still not convinced that he won't come out Friday and say we're going to extend another week because we're making progress at the Washington talks, which take place on Thursday, Friday. So that's my hope. That's my optimism, is that maybe it'll get delayed for a week or two to let the Chinese know that, yeah, we're serious about getting this done.
I don't have the notes in front of me, but Mexico was making a little news today as well. They talked about the U.S. moving to prevent them from dumping tomatoes in this country cheaply. And they're saying that if the U.S. continues on this policy, that the tomato costs for us could go up 40 to 70%. I didn't realize that half the tomatoes we eat come from Mexico.
At this time of the year, yes. Earlier in the year and over the winter, we tend to get them from the Imperial Valley, which is California, Arizona. But yes, Mexico. And that's why closing the border really concerned farmers, dairy right. farmers in particularly, because we move so much cheese and dairy product into Mexico. And Mexico is the biggest buyer of corn
from
the United States.
Are they dumping their tomatoes in the U.S.?
I wouldn't call it dumping, but they're certainly finding a home for it because people want it.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, let's go to the Olive Garden and enjoy some tomato sauce.
That's right. And, of course, last year it was avocados. They had a challenge on the avocado crop in Mexico, and that's where we get a lot of our avocados. And that had an impact on the avocado price here in the U.S.
All right, take a broader look at the market, if you will. The Dow is down what's currently 427 points, 1.6%. The NASDAQ down more than 2%. But, I mean, it has been a good start to the year. The Dow up 11.5% over the first 5 months. The NASDAQ up over 20%. Should we be worried about sell-offs like the one we're seeing today?
Well, yeah, we can be concerned, but I'm not worried about it. And on a day like this, I would never sell anything in the market because who knows? We could see the market sharply higher tomorrow the way it's been bouncing. And again, I've said this many times, that's the reason I look at my 401k twice a year.
Take your time. Orion Samuelson, great to talk to you today. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. And we thank them for that. Thank you as well for listening. Okay, so think about your romantic relationships maybe, or this is a business show, so your workplace relationships. And think about all the things that go unsaid because, well, you just have a silent agreement that that's the way they're going to work. That's the subject of Kelly Leonard's podcast, Getting to Yes And, this week. And he's here to tell us why that's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. It's a really bad idea.
Sonia Banks has written this book with others. It's called Silent Agreements, How to Free Your Relationships from Unspoken Expectations.
Yeah.
This isn't just a dating book, right?
No. It kind of shifts between the workplace and your relationships. And if you think about it, this goes back to childhood. And I have a story from my childhood that I remembered about this, which was I was at Sunday school and the teacher said, all right, we all don't like things about people. What do you not like about people? And I said, I don't like fat people. And she was overweight.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I remember my parents, it was like an open forum, were like, you cannot say that. And think about how many times that happened in childhood where you were like, you can't say it, don't say it. And so we have this behavior that starts when we're younger. And then when we're maybe dating or we're at work, we decide it's more comfortable not to say the thing.
Well, okay, so the way I was reading it, mm-hmm. right, it's more comfortable not to say it, but then it's also comfortable to just make up or create this understanding with the other party, right? So Kelly, you might come in here and I might say, you know, Kelly's great. We get along so well. I don't even have to say hello to him because he comes in, he's comfortable and all that.
And I'm like, why is this guy not saying hello to me every
exactly.
time I come in? What a jerk.
So we're having our own conversations in our heads about each other.
Yeah, we make these assumptions and we do this all the time. And we don't want to talk about sex. We don't want to talk about money. I thought about that. I had this conversation after I read this book with my wife. And
right.
she's like, oh yeah, you hate talking about money. And I'm like, why is that? And I realized, like, I don't want to ask for a raise, but I think I deserve the raise. But if my boss doesn't know that I think I want the raise, and by the way, he doesn't want to talk about it either.
Well, but they're damaging conversations because, and I do this all the time, where I end up, you know, I'm 3 weeks into an argument with someone who I haven't seen in 2 months.
And they don't know you're in the argument at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, we do it over and over again. One of the things that she points out, and I thought that this was interesting in thinking about money in the workplace, where she said, when uncovering silent agreements in the workplace, it's helpful to note what you have observed and experienced that has made the conversation necessary. And it's also very effective if you solicit other person's point of view. So to get to the truth, you really do have to pull it out of people.
Of them.
They don't want to tell you. Yeah.
So you might be ready to end your silent agreement, but you have to bring the other person into it too.
Yeah, and make it unsilent and then find out what the new agreement might be.
But, you know, Gary Mills is going to be on later this week. He writes about active listening.
Yeah.
And that's in a way what that is, right? It's like, tell me your story. I want to know what you're feeling what's your part of the silent agreement?
There's all this behavioral science evidence of this, that we don't say things, our default behavior is to do nothing, and that we also misperceive, because all these silent agreements. So you really have to push yourself to ask the question, and you never get the right answer right away, right? People don't tell you the truth right away. You have to build a culture in which you highly question each other.
Can silent agreements be useful too?
They can, if everyone's cool with it.
Right.
So if the silent agreement matches your partner's silent agreement, yeah, that you don't need to talk about it.
So if your wife is like, he doesn't talk about money and I'm okay with that because he can't
handle the money.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the way it works in my relationship now that everyone knows.
Right. Okay, so the podcast is getting to Yes And.
Yep.
Take this to the workplace then, and how do I go to my boss? And, you know, it's not even about getting a raise, right, or getting a promotion. It's just about getting on an even footing so that he knows or she knows what I want and I know what she wants or expects.
Yeah, well, first of all, they have their silent agreement. So the billionaire and the cook both want to maximize their profitability. So what you really need to understand is that both things are in play. So understanding from a boss's perspective, I mean, I've had this conversation with Andrew Alexander at Second City before when we've talked about money, where he's like, you don't know the kind of insurance I have to pay and all the costs of maintaining this building and all that. And I'm like, yeah, and also these are the bills I have to pay. But I think back on this in our conversations, when we both lay that out, then we're working with real data.
Right, right. And you know where each other stands.
And when you're not, you're working with emotion.
Or you know where each other doesn't sleep at night.
Yes.
Kelly Leonard, the name of the podcast, Getting to Yes And. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And you can get it at WGNradio.com and all sorts of other places.
And SecondCityWorks.com.
Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, in the studio now is Jeff Meredith, the president and COO of Chamberlain Group. What is Chamberlain Group? Well, it's the company behind Chamberlain and LiftMaster garage doors. Jeff, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you very much, Steve. Great to be here.
Okay, so we were talking off the air. If I were forced to name a garage door company, LiftMaster comes to mind right away. And Chamberlain, I guess, to a lesser extent. But do you guys dominate the market? I mean, what other companies are out there?
We certainly have a leading position in the market, Steve. And through the brands that you just mentioned, LiftMaster is sold through our professional or dealer segment. And Chamberlain is offered in our retail space, so in Home Depot and Lowe's. So both of those are very prominent brands and very successful. And certainly we have the leading position.
Are they similar products?
Similar products. There are some unique variances just to enable the professional dealers to have some unique things that they take to market, but very similar and definitely similar from a reliability and a security standpoint.
They're absolutely completely reliable and secure.
Absolutely.
Sure.
No doubt, Steve.
Well, you know, you don't think of garage doors as sort of being a disruptive industry, but in a way, they have become so, right? Because the remote garage door, and by remote I mean not with a button but with an app, is kind of the way of the future when it comes to accessibility to our houses.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the garage is not only the biggest door in the home, but it's also the one that's most frequently entered by homeowners. And we've done a lot of work over the last few years to transition the garage door to really a smart home device. We've added connectivity and we use MyQ technology, which is the terminology that we've put on our accessibility connectivity component. So certainly we've moved the garage door from just an open and close event to one that you can navigate and manage in a more digital way.
So we're talking about what? It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I've been at work for 2 hours. I'm like, damn, I think I might have left my door open.
All you have to do is crack open the MyQ app and just close it. First off, you could just see whether or not you had or had not.
Through a cloud cam.
Yeah. We'd notify you on open and close event. So you'll be able to see as you drive away in the morning, did it close or not close? And then if you did forget, you'll be able to identify that it's still open and close remotely.
If I want to know if my son actually did get up to go to work, I could see if he's open or closed the garage.
Yeah, or in my case, if mine came home in the evening at the right time.
You don't have to get out of bed. You know.
That's
exactly.
Right.
That's perfect. Okay, but we're talking about this in conjunction with Amazon and the Key by Amazon package delivery. And you guys have a program where Amazon drivers can access people's garage doors, right? And this is sort of separate from what we just were talking about.
Yeah, that's right. This is an evolution for us from a business standpoint, in that we're now bringing access solutions to our customers through partnerships, unique partnerships. And the first one is a big one. It's with Amazon for Prime users and package delivery. So, you know, package theft and weather damage, re-delivery if you're not home, are all issues and pain points, really, for customers around package delivery. So we think we've solved those in many respects through delivery directly into the garage.
You know, I think people are a little apprehensive maybe about letting someone into their front door for a package or into their car for a package, and a garage door would be a little less so, I suppose.
Certainly. As we've gone out and researched with our customers and discussed garage as a destination for package delivery, it's not seen as nearly as intrusive as entry into the front door, or as challenging as sort of getting the car in the right destination and making sure that that's accessible. So we think it's really going to change the game from a delivery standpoint.
Okay, so how does it work? Amazon's doing this in 50 cities, right?
Correct.
And so they would show up, they show up at my house, my door is equipped. It's not like they're going to key in my key code or to get in that way, right? How does it work?
So the first thing that you need is you need either a MyQ accessible or MyQ connected garage door opener, or if your garage door opener is not Wi-Fi enabled, you can buy a smart garage hub directly from us that enables you to connect it. So with your hardware ready, you're able to just select in garage delivery as you go through your Prime order.
So when I buy something, it'll say deliver to the stoop or deliver, I can say choose in the garage if
you
I set it up that way.
You can choose in garage delivery.
Okay.
Now what actually happens when the driver comes onto the property through geolocation, they know that we know that the driver is actually in the proximity of your home. There's also a back check to make sure that the package that he's delivering is actually the one appropriate for your home. The Amazon driver will ping our cloud, so the MyQ cloud, and we'll be able to open the door. Once the package is safely left inside, we again get a signal from the Amazon driver. We close the door. We notify the user. You can have it through just a simple notification on the app, or if you want to add a camera, you can also have a video-based notification.
So the Amazon driver's telling you this at Chamberlain, but am I getting that those notifications as well?
You are.
Okay.
Absolutely. You get four notifications from Amazon. One when you
for
place
every package
the order.
Delivery. Okay.
You get one the morning of, you get one shortly before, so if you want to watch on video, you can, and you get one just after to signal the door is closed and it's safely inside.
So Amazon is one thing. How do you expand this to, say, the cable guy or someone who's going to look at my hot water heater, things like that?
You know, this was really our vision when we moved to a more connected solution for our garage door opener, that, you know, with that being a primary access point for your home, you can now schedule entry for relatives that come.
I don't have to be home
people.
Between 10 and 2.
No, you don't.
Right.
So this is, as we go on and we expand our capabilities and our focal points for our business, you know, looking at these service providers or other people that enter the home on a regular basis and given a scheduled event around that is important.
So two ways, we can buy the door opener through you or we can buy a kit that to go
Correct.
Onto our existing. How many people are using this?
So far, you know, we've done about 3,000 package deliveries just in the last week and a half.
Right.
Sorry, 6,000 package deliveries in about a week and a half. And so we're getting adoption, as you said, in the 50 cities. We wanted to make sure that we had a very high level of reliability.
Sure.
So at the outset, reliability is at 99%. So of those 6,000 packages, we're delivering at 99%. So the adoption has been strong just in the early days of the program.
Jeff Meredith is the president and COO of Chamberlain Group, Chamberlain Garage Doors and LiftMaster. Thanks for coming by. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate you having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day.
Some may say having a good product as a startup is the most important thing for success, but others may say, no matter what, it's all about your sales. But what if you're not good at that?
Hey.
What? You're not very good at sales.
Okay.
But that's okay, because it's one of those things you can get better at with practice, and MHUB is providing that opportunity to get better with a lunch and learn surrounding cold calling. Maureen Wozniak of the BBB will be at MHUB on Thursday the 9th at noon to sort through the ins and outs of how not to get the phone slammed on you, because no one wants that. Go ahead and register at MHUBChicago.com. And on a separate note, we cleaned up nicely at the James Beard Awards that were this week at the Lyric Opera. The minds behind Boca Group, Publican Quality Bread, and River North's Pacific Standard Time were just some of the notables, but all solidifying our place in the restaurant world. Also, in case you forgot, Chicago's hosting the Beard Awards until 2021. So what's up? Take that, New York! I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, it's 2019, which means next year, by almost every calendar, would be 2020, and that makes it a census year, and this is about the time in the census cycles where we start worrying about who's going to be counted and who is not. And the Chicago Urban League is out with a study that said that Illinois' population is among the hardest to count in the country. Amy Guth is here. She's the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast you get from Crane Chicago Business, and find it at WGNradio.com. Amy, welcome.
Thanks.
All right. Are we not going to get our people counted?
You know, it's a really interesting one because this report from the Chicago Urban League is called Money and Power, the Economic and Political Impact of the 2020 Census on Illinois. Like the name alone kind of sets the stage for what's at stake.
It's not going to be more money.
It's not going to be more money. And in fact, other things that are at stake is because we have population decline, we already have a congressional seat that's at risk. So in addition to that, we have some other areas that we need to look at when we're thinking about census funding.
The study finds that 42% of our population is in a hard to count area. What do they mean by that?
Hard to count can mean a lot of things. It can mean difficult to get to for census workers, but it can also be a group of people that maybe doesn't have a lot of trust or have a lot of awareness of what the data is used for. And right now, when we're in this conversation where almost every day we're having thoughts about data breaches and our data privacy and who has our data and what they're doing with it, not surprising that a lot of people, you know, someone knocks on the door and says, hey, fill out a form, you're going to shut the door.
It's interesting to me, too, that the study found, or maybe it was a different study, that we are less trustworthy of the federal government than of governments closer to us, say state or local. I mean, I always think of the state government as the rascals.
Sure.
More so than the federal.
Right. But I think that's shifted probably. So, so that's one thing. What's at stake, though, is I think is really important to note. So Medicaid funding, that's at stake because that's based on an average income of the state, not necessarily population.
Which explain that for me. So then the idea is that if the poor people aren't counted, our per capita salary looks greater than it is.
Yep. It's Medicaid funding is not based on population, but on average income of the population that is counted. So if you are dealing with like a hard to count population, that's going to change that number and won't give you an accurate reading. And then it's going to be limited resources for people who need it.
All right. That's coming up, that and more on The Daily Gist today.
Yeah, that's right. Every afternoon, iTunes, Google Play, and WGN Plus.
You can subscribe to it, right? Rather than hunt it down every
day. That's the easiest way to do it. No, it just goes right to your phone and you got it for your commute.
Amy Guth, thanks for coming by.
Thanks.